We'd like to begin the show on a somber note to mourn the loss of fellow metalhead and friend Nitin Rajan, who passed away on 17th November 2020.
Vocalist, festival promoter, digital head, Nitin played many roles in the Indian music scene. A metal lifer, Nitin started the earliest known death metal band in Bombay, at least, Mortiside, and then later was one of the founders of Domination the Death Fest. I still remember as a young metalhead reading about a metal festival in the Metal India zine and being amazed that there was an extreme metal festival being held in India. But on a personal front, I still remember meeting Nitin a decade ago at the first edition of the Rolling Stone Metal Awards. He was a judge, and I think we just casually introduced ourselves and became friends from there. And I still remember how excited he was in 2013 when he was bringing back Domination the Death Fest. I prefer performing live, Nitin used to tell me whenever we would meet. And I'm sure anyone who has watched him at a gig where either Primitive or Killibrium performed in recent years would agree that he was a powerhouse on stage. And he really had the command of the entire audience. Everyone who met Nitin, even if it was just once, I'm sure has a great story to tell about him. Thank you for the music and also your friendship. Bombay Death Metal Legion forever.
Now on Horns Up Today, we are talking to a band that's coming back with fresh music after more than 5 long years. It's Canadian, and in their own words, bastardized grindcore and mulletcore. Yes, it's Fuck the Facts. The new album, Plain Noir, is as brutal and ethereal as you'd expect, and quite a boatload of fun as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was really, really kicked that they were releasing new music after 5 years, after all. And I really enjoyed the album. Can't wait to see what they're going to be up to in the next few months or so.
Yeah. We've had quite a lengthy chat with drummer Matthew, whose surname I won't even attempt to butcher because my French is limited to omelette du fromage. So, like thousands of others, we'll call him Will. Here we fucking go.
We're joined by Will from Fuck the Facts. Hi, Will. How are you doing today?
Good, good. I'm doing good.
So, I mean, how have you been holding up these past few months? I mean, there's been so much going on across the world, not just Canada alone, right?
Yeah, well, it's obviously it hasn't been ideal, but we're dealing with it as good as we can. And you know, I'm fortunate enough, everyone's healthy, and yeah, it sucks, but hey, there's not much we can do. Everyone's in the same boat pretty much. So, you know, just hanging out, listening to music, drinking some wine, having a good time as much as possible, and yeah.
Yep, it is what it is.
Yeah. So for me, I've been spending just like you a lot of time listening to music, and considering that we're spending so much time indoors, and I hadn't heard from Fuck the Facts in like 5 years, and it's been a while, especially since your last album, Desire Will Rot. So, what has the band been up to in the past 5 years?
We took a long break after Desirable Rot. We did a few tours in Canada, the United States, and then we went to Europe. And then we pretty much just, you know, went home and kind of said, "All right, see you guys, you know, next time." And like a year later, you know, a year goes by, and then we're like, "Okay, maybe we should start playing again and just jam a few times and see how it feels." And you know, I think we needed kind of a break after all the touring, and you know, we're getting older and we have jobs, so I think we wanted a bit more time with ourselves and our families. And then yeah, we just started playing again, and then started writing, and kind of everything came together naturally. So we're like, "Okay, well, we got an album now, so I guess we kind of have to record it." And we did that. We started the process like 2.5 years ago, So like I did the drums in January 2018, and then
we did the guitars.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like, you know, we're not as like active as before, right? Not only show-wise, but I think we're making sure that we're enjoying ourselves while doing all this stuff. So we took our time, and you know, we have families and jobs and all that normal stuff, right? It takes up more and more of your time as you grow older, and you know, more responsibilities and all that stuff. So yeah, we took our time and did the guitars, the drums, and then everything's kind of in-house. So that also explains why it takes, you know, a lot of time compared to just like going into the studio, recording everything, then mix, master, and like it's out like 3 months after. Like, that's just usually not how it goes for us, right? So we did everything, and then, you know, a few months ago, everything was done, and we were ready to release. So we're just happy to finally, you know, be done and to release it, and you know, we'll go from there and see what happens.
Okay, so that explains what the band's been up to over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
What about you personally? How have things changed for you over the last 5 years?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question, because, you know, I joined the band, I was 19 years old. So I wasn't really old, and we kind of started touring right when I joined. I mean, the band already toured, but I kind of started my touring life a few months after joining the band, and it kind of didn't really stop for like a decade. So that was kind of my life, right? I would go on tour, go back home, work so that I could, you know, afford a drum kit and cymbals and all that stuff. And you know, obviously, like I had to pay rent and all these, you know, normal life,
the necessities of human life.
Yeah, the boring stuff, but you know, it's still a necessity.
The facts of human life, so that they could be fucked later.
I was going to say taxes, but then okay, go ahead.
Also, yeah, but so yeah, like it was kind of a pattern that I was used to and comfortable with for a lot of years. And I really enjoyed touring. It's something really fun, and it's a peculiar way of, you know, living your life, going on tour like every year. And I work in bars and restaurants, and I've been working in that industry for, you know, as long as I've been in Fuck the Facts. So it was a perfect job for someone like me. So when we stopped, kind of abruptly, in a way, at least my life kind of changed abruptly. So I went into what I knew, you know, the most, or what I was the most comfortable with, and it's that working at a bar. So me and two friends, we owned and operated a bar, and I was there for a full year. And then it was kind of like overwhelming, because I went from touring and like this kind of crazy life, and then it stopped, and it was like, here's my time to like slow down and, you know, just enjoy normal life. And I was like, no, I'm going to try and own a bar, which is kind of way worse than touring. but it was fun, and I absolutely don't regret any of it. But I did that for a year, and then I was like, I'm tired. I'm done. I have to just step back. And I stopped, and then I found work in other places, and it was kind of much better for me that way. And then we started playing again, so that was kind of a good thing. So like the year we didn't see each other, I was constantly working. So, you know, I stopped that and then went back to a more normal schedule, and things are a bit better like that for me now.
Okay, I have to ask, the time that you were in the bar, how many people came up to you and said, oh my God, are you the drummer from Fuck the Facts?
It doesn't happen often, I can tell you.
Is it because you're the drummer at the back?
Probably, yeah, probably. Or they remember me from like 10 years ago and I don't have like facial hair, or not a lot. You know, I'm 35 now, so it's a long journey. And a lot, I think, especially locally, because like people knew the band a lot, or I should say people that knew the band like 15 plus years ago.
They really often, knew the band. Yeah,
or they don't follow the band anymore. So they're not, you know, they're not, they don't know who's in the band anymore. And we've had like a decent amount of lineup changes over the years. So, but you know, at the end of the day too, like we're not a big band, right? Like it's not like, hey, look, it's the guy from Fuck the Facts. Like it, these things happen, but like it's trivial, right? It happens here and there, you know, it's, yeah. It's funny when it does happen and you hope that they remember you for the like good reason for something positive.
So yeah. Nobody's gone like, hey, you remember that one show you played? You didn't actually play the double beat pattern that you played on the album there.
Well, if someone...
I'm just pulling a leg.
Oh, it's... Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I'm sure... I'm sure things like that happen and it's like, yeah, you're right. But, you know, it's hard to play, man. Like, it's... I have to save my energy at some point in the show.
But
someone tells me that, they're probably right, actually. I'm sure they know more the drum parts than I do.
Okay, cool.
Right. So, you know, you touched upon this in the previous response where you talked about the lineup, right? I mean, one of the big changes, at least with Fuck the Facts now, is that you're down to a three-piece. So,
yeah.
Of course, you talked about, you know, it being 2.5 years that you all spent, you know, writing the album. But do you feel that, you know, being a three-piece made it a little more efficient in that way?
I think for certain things, it helps. Obviously, if you're in the studio and there's two of you versus five, you know, like, there's going to be much less debate about sometimes, like, futile things. So in that regard, I think it can help sometimes to be like just two or three. But for a lot of other things, it's harder. Like playing shows, we have to find people that are willing to play with us. But yeah, for recording and writing, I think it is probably easier like that, especially because me and Topan, we've been playing together for like 15 years. And it's one of those, I told him this summer, I saw him a few times and I told him, like, I think that kind of how should I say, like, I don't want to say energy, but just that link that we have, that relationship that we have musically, it's like, I know now, because I'm old enough and I've been playing long enough, that I'm most likely not going to get that, you know, ever again with someone else. Like it's kind of a one shot deal, you know, and it works well. So it's, I think, yeah, if it's just me, because even when we had like Mark and Johnny, these guys live like 6 hours from where we live. So they had to drive a lot and they weren't there unless we had like something going on, right? So it was still usually, but well, most of the time, me and Topan practicing. So it in that regard, it didn't change the dynamic too much. But globally now, yeah, it's a bit easier for us just because it's smoother. You know, like it sucks to say, but you're dealing with less people. So like many other things, it's just easier. It's easier for just getting a schedule, you know, I think logically it's going to be a bit easier for us to be three, but not if we go on tour.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that I always thought about with the sound that you all have. And, you know,
you could be like, I'm sure now, like if you're touring as a three piece, it would mean that you will have to be doing a lot more, right? Maybe triggering the samples here and there, et cetera, too.
I don't think we would tour as a three piece. Like we already play with two other musicians or friends of ours. We did one show with them, which is the only show we played since in the last 5 years, I think. Or yeah, I think so. and or 4 years, something like that. But we do have musicians we play with. I don't think we would want to, you know, try it as a three piece. I don't think it would work that much. I think we've tried some stuff like that in the past, and we're like, yeah, no, we're even as a four piece, we were like, this is not working for what we want to do, at least. So yeah, if we have to go, like, well, not have, I mean, if we get to go on tour, it most definitely will be as a five piece.
All right. Now, you know, the band is kind of known for its experimental sound. And, you know, you talked about you and Topan writing together. During that process, do you all have any kind of guidelines or boundaries as such while working, you know, on a track or an album? Or is it anything goes?
It's usually anything goes. Like, it's the way we usually work is we're gonna use songs that we've had, like demos or recordings of like band practice that we put like in a, you know, on a drive, you know, a Google Drive or something like that, and we just kind of add to that over the years, and then we pick and choose from these things, and we bring back parts of songs or complete songs that we wrote like years ago. On Plein Noirceur, there's songs that, you know, were written like well over 10 years ago and that we just had lying around because, yeah, we never really used them. So we take some of that, we take some bits and pieces of band practice, and then I like to write like kind of usually full songs that I bring to Topan, and he adds his stuff, and, you know, kind of to complete the song and make it really an FDF song. You know, I think it really forms up when everyone has an input, and then we write at every band practice. At least we try to. Sometimes it's, you know, absolutely horrible, but we still usually try to record it and work from that. And yeah, that usually brings like the best results, I find, is when me and Topan are just kicking it and trying stuff like the good old fashioned way, just jamming.
I respect that. I respect that. That's the way most of, I mean, especially when you have a creative partnership, I think that's the best way to actually end up creating magic, because you never know what's going to, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a weird dynamic.
Thing. Yeah.
Because sometimes I think we consciously, like at one point, Topan was like, I think we need to talk. Like, we would show up to jam, would go in the car and be like, hey, how you doing? Doing all right. And we talk about work a bit, and then we go in the jam room, jam, and barely say a word. And it was like, all right, and now we can move to, like, all right, let's write. We've done all the practice stuff, and then we would just go record. And that's, you know, at some point you do that so many times, you're bound to have like at least one riff that's not absolutely horrible.
Right. So one of the things, you know, I found interesting from your last album, Desire Will Rot, was that it was nominated for the Juno Award for, you know, in the Heavy Metal Album of the Year category. What was your reaction to that, initial reaction at least?
It was actually the second time that we were nominated for a Juno. So, I mean, you're happy. It's kind of a weird thing, really, because, you know, Justin Bieber gets nominated for Junos. Drake gets nominated for Junos. You know, it's like the Canadian Grammys.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
So pretty much
that.
No one gives a damn. But
no, but I'm sorry, but I disagree on that, because the Junos, unlike the Grammys, when they say heavy metal, they actually heavy metal.
Oh yeah, for that, yeah.
I mean, you guys were nominated alongside Cataclysm, who won the award that year, but also bands like Ken Mode and all of them.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Like, legit.
They're legit.
Oh, yeah. But they brought it back. It's because for the longest time, they had nothing. I think they had something in the 90s. And then in 2012, the Junos brought back the category, which is best metal album. Or they've already changed it a bit since, but essentially best metal artist or best metal album. And they brought it back in 2012, and we got nominated for that year alongside Ken Mode, who actually won that year. And these guys are good friends of ours. We toured with them.
What's been up with Ken Mode on a completely like different, like I know.
I knew you're gonna ask about this.
Because they've what's up with them?
Yeah, they've deleted their social media profiles and stuff, right?
I think they're still going.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have Jesse on Facebook, and they're working on stuff. Like you can see they're working on music. I don't know what exactly, but they are working on music for sure.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I don't know, because I'm not on Facebook.
But yeah, they're. I think I don't know how active they are, but they are.
All right,
that's for sure. Yeah. We should thanks get some that. More Ken Mode, hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I was saying, for the Junos, like in 2012, I think I remember Topon telling us like, "All right, like we have," because the way they do it, they don't tell you you're nominated. The way that it worked is that they tell you should really go to Toronto at that date in that building. And yeah, just go there. You know, you want to be there. It's like, okay. You know what it means, obviously, right? Like, and we went, and we were so brutally out of place because it's just like, it's not something we're used to. And then, yeah, that was really surprising for us. And I would say the reaction was surprising as well. Or yeah, because we're not a band that people are going to, you know, traditional media is going to talk about very often. Right. They're only going to talk about us if they have to. And I guess the Junos is one of those reasons. So in 2012, we actually, you know, got a decent amount of like big media, if you will, coverage, which was kind of cool. And you know, but at the end of the day, it kind of feels more like trivial. It's like I can say I was nominated for a Juno. I don't know how much it actually impacts whatever it is we do. It's a neat thing. It's kind of a like your uncle and your aunt are like proud of you, but and your friends that don't really know what it is that you do are like, they know what a Juno is. They know nothing about what you do, but they're proud, you know, they're happy for you. So that's really good. And I can't complain. And we got nominated again in 2016. And I don't know, it's a neat thing. We never got to go to the actual ceremonies though. That's the only thing that bums me out. Like, I think so
they
would have been funny
they only call the winners.
I think it's like that's the Grammy, no. Right? It's announced separately. Is that kind of thing?
Well, it's definitely announced separately. Don't worry. Metal doesn't make it to the TV. But yeah, they usually have a ceremony the day before like the big show. But it was just out of coincidence. Like both times we were on tour in Europe, we just couldn't go. We were invited, but we couldn't go. So I kind of just want to be nominated again so I can go. But there's a pandemic now, so I guess it wouldn't really matter.
So do you have like a suit ready just for that? Because like, hey, mom, I'm going to the Junos.
Actually, I'll say a really cheesy thing. I have a suit that why did I make that suit? Anyway, it's some cheap company that make like tailored suits. And I was at that, I think for wedding of some sort. I can't remember. But they were like, you can put like some writing in your pocket. What do you want to put? I was like, just put fuck the facts. So I got one suit and it's written fuck the facts inside.
That's awesome.
But I never wear it.
personally, I would love it if you guys ever won a Juno properly, only because, and for it to be like on TV, only because I want to see the crowd going, or at least the media companies trying to go apeshit when they realize that the word fuck is on air and they can't do anything about it.
I remember in 2012 when we went to Toronto for the announcements, like whoever the guy was reading the nominees for our category, kind of he stopped and he kind of did a double take and he laughed like, and it's like, dude, it's just the word fuck. Like, I mean, it's not like you just discovered the word, like just say fuck the facts and no one's filming. It's just like a private event. Like, who cares? But I guess it doesn't take much to
rally up the...
Yeah.
But. Oh, well. We'll talk a lot more about that word much later in this interview. Anyways, sure. coming back to talking about the latest album, and as someone who really doesn't understand French, even though he tried for a year to study it, what's Plein Noceur? I don't even know Plein if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, not bad. Okay. No. It's the literal translation would be full darkness.
Full darkness. Yeah, we got that. I mean, we here in India, we do have access to Google Translate as well.
But, I'm sure you do.
Is there a larger story behind choosing those words, though, to be your album title? I mean, is it like a statement about the bleak times we live in?
Most of that stuff is really like Mel. Mel writes the lyrics, and I think when you were asking if we had like boundaries when we were writing music and all that stuff, we don't really have boundaries or like a main theme, whereas Mel usually does have something that's pretty clear in her head, which I guess makes sense because lyrics are, you know, completely other thing than writing music. But yeah, I think, and the themes that Mel works on are usually like darkness, like depression. You know, it's kind of a bleak thing, but yeah, I wouldn't want to talk for her, you know, about the meaning of it all, but it surely has, you know, a link to the global state of things. And also, like, I think on a personal experience of daily life.
Yeah, you know, one thing I'm glad is that when we got like a promo copy for the album, it came with the lyrics, and that's one thing I really miss out in the digital age, is where, you know, you get, especially for like a grindcore or death metal band, right? I mean,
yeah.
Unless you can kind of decipher what they're saying. So yeah, reading through those lyrics, I completely get where you're coming from, at least, or what you're talking about.
Now, you know, along with the lyrics, the promo copy obviously had the album artwork as well. And interestingly, while staring at it for a really long time, I noticed that I couldn't really find the album title on the album cover, apart from it being listed as one of the songs. You guys have done this earlier as well. Any particular reason for that?
I that's a good question. I'm not even sure. I would have to look at the at the cover. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think a lot of what we do is on the simple side, and I'm not saying that in any kind of negative way whatsoever. I think there's a simplicity to what we do, and it works well for us. And I think that for the visual as well, whether it's a shirt design or an album cover, and Mel is also, you know, the one making all the artwork for this album, as she did in the past for most of her releases. I think it's most likely an aesthetic decision. Also, I mean, you don't really need to put the title on the album. I would say that visually, you can identify this album. Like, you won't be lost
easily
within her albums.
Yeah.
And it's got to be written somewhere. But yeah, and it's also just less, you know, of a typical approach. And I think it... Personally, I think it looks better like that. And it gives more space to the actual art.
Cool.
All right. Now, here's a question that only you from the band will be able to answer. which is, what's a drum technique on this album that only a skilled or experienced drummer or drummers will notice?
Me fucking up. So they will notice that that it's not always perfectly played, that's for sure.
So you guys do leave the mistakes in and all. There's no like cleaning up or
there's, you guys end there's up quantizing.
You tell me. You take a lesson and tell me if the, if this thing is quantized. Hell, nope. It's actually at one point I think we were doing a lot more like nitpicking and like making sure everything was like absolutely perfect. But I think nowadays with computers and all that we have, you know, to make our albums better in metal, we have a bit of a tendency of, you know, killing the dynamics and like,
yeah, making it sound too mechanical.
Yeah. And I mean, and the paradox is that the like, especially for drums, because it's probably one of the, you know, the heaviest, it's the heaviest part of the album usually, I think. And it's what's the most edited as well, I would think. But we've never had like so many amazing drummers that can literally play what a drum machine plays, and yet they're like sound replaced to oblivion. It's a question of vision and how you see a band sounding, because there's a lot of people hear what we do and they're like, this sounds like shit. And if you listen to what, you know, most bands are putting out, we're far away from that kind of production. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. I'm saying I like one more than the other. Because I listen to, you know, a bunch of like super produced bands and I love it. Like it's also how it works. Like it's an industry. There's a certain sound for certain styles and some people want to stick with it and some people don't. And, you know, coming from a kind of a grindcore background, it's for what we're supposed to sound like, this sounds pretty polished, you know? It could sound like a fucking lawnmower, but it sounds fine to me. Like it, but yeah, like I don't know. I don't do any special technique, you know. I'm a pretty basic ass drummer, and yeah, you know, it's probably playing guitar better on the album than drums. So
okay. all right. Having said that, then, how do you keep, you know, challenging yourself or making things keeping yourself interested for as a drummer for Fuck the Facts?
I think that like the first thing for anything implying the band is like if we have fun, if we're enjoying ourselves, I think that's going to translate to other people enjoying what we do. It's pretty, I think, basic stuff, you know, whether it's a live show or an album. We're always trying to do something a bit different. Like we're definitely not reinventing the wheel every time we do an album or an EP, but I think that we try different things enough for us to keep being interested. And, that's what makes it fun for us, whether it's the production or just the structures of the album or a song or new instruments we might want to try, or, you know, adding like, I don't know, like an electronic backbeat, stuff like that. Like, why not? Like there's no real limit to what we can do. Like what's the worst that can happen? Someone's not going to like it, you know? So what? Yeah. There's so many other bands.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. As long as we're happy with it, the rest kind of just, it's out of our hands, right? So yeah, we just do what we want to do. And as long as we're happy, then we have a band.
That's a good attitude to have. Right. So I'm not going to try and attempt speaking in French. So we'd like to play a track from the album. Which one should we play and why?
Probably Pleine Noirceur is a good choice. just because it's the title track of the album. It's the first single. I think it gives a really good idea of where we're going with this album in general. And it's not a 38-second song.
Yeah, and it also kicks ass.
We'll be right back.
So when you all released this title track as a single, the band put out a statement, and I quote, "This album also could have been easily three EPs. You really have to listen to the whole thing to fully enjoy it. It opens the doors for what is next." So here's my question. What is next for Fuck the Facts?
That is a great question. obviously, with all that's happening with the pandemic, it's hard to really know what's coming up next, at least regarding shows and tours around the new album. We haven't played, like I haven't jammed with Topon since March, maybe February. So it's been a while. It means I haven't played drums since then. means I'm probably rusty. We wanted to do some videos, some photo shoots. I'd like to do a drum playthrough just to, you know, push a bit the promotion behind the album on the short term. And then, you know, it's honestly, we haven't really talked about it too much because what can we really do at this point? We'd like to do a few things around the release date of the album, toying with some few ideas. Hopefully, you know, something's gonna materialize and we get to do a little something, you know, not a live show, but, you know, some interactive thing with whoever would like to participate. So could be a bit fun. And, you know, long term, I think hopefully we'll get to play shows in 2021. We were supposed to play Maryland Death Fest this last May and a few shows around it in the U.S. So hopefully we get to go to the U.S. in May 2021. We still don't know if that's going to be a possibility. So we're hoping for that. We're hoping for some shows in Canada as well. And then I guess we'll take it from there. I started writing a bit for something. I don't know, you know, just writing. So we have something to start working on once we start jamming again. And I'm sure Topon's doing the same thing on his side. And that's pretty much it. Like, hopefully we'll be able to play next year and we'll take it from there.
Okay, cool. Cool. Alrighty, so, you know, one of the interesting things, or yeah, one of the things that really caught my eye while, you know, visiting all your websites, etc., was that you guys describe your music with two amazing genre titles, and that's what I want to talk about. What the fuck is bastardized grindcore and mulletcore? What's the story behind these two descriptors?
Well, I'm sure I can talk more about bastardized grindcore than mulletcore, but bastardized grindcore, you know, I guess it comes back to the name of the band as well. You know, the kind of this license to do whatever it is we want within, you know, that kind of grindcore ethos. Like it's kind of a frame of mind more than a, you know, a style of music for us. Because obviously, if you listen to the album, it's not like straight up grindcore, right? Like it's just not what it is. Like if your favorite band is Rotten Sound, you're probably going to be disappointed with our album. you know, we've came a long way since, yeah, Mullet Fever, which is obviously way more of a grindcore album. But yeah, I think it's just, you know, a clever way of, you know, of explaining what it is we're trying to do and kind of setting somewhat of a border. Because you gotta, you know, you gotta give people something. Like, just saying metal is usually enough, I'll say. But
yeah, it's also
bastardized
a neat
grindcore
way to...
sounds so much better.
Exactly. It's also great for SEO.
Yeah. Yeah. And mulletcore, I know. You know, I think at some point there were so many like every band had his subgenre, especially in grind, like so many like different types of grind with
yeah, yeah,
all the fucking same. But it was maybe it's part of like the aesthetics of grindcore. Like
it's like Leng Chi head, right? Razor grind.
Razor grind. That's it. Yeah. Shredcore. You know, it's like, what the fuck is this? But it's just, you know, it's another way of you know, making yourself unique. It might seem kind of, you know, futile, but it's just a little something. Like, yep. And it's kind of neat, you know.
Of course it is. Okay. You remember around the beginning of the interview we spoke about the word fuck, right?
Yes.
And I said we'll come back to it later. So yes. Here's that part, because the next set of questions are essentially all just attempts at really bad jokes to try and, you know, just shoot the shit with Perfect. You as such. So please continue to humor us, I guess.
Will do.
Yeah, the word fuck, it said, can be used to describe or emote almost any emotion or thing, right? It's a noun, it's an adverb, it's an adjective, it's a verb. What's been the wittiest or funniest use of the word fuck that you've ever encountered?
Ugh.
Fuck. I wish I knew the answer to that.
That's actually, that's gonna be fuck. I don't know. That's a...
Okay, cool. Think about it.
I'm trying to think. It's just hard because it's uttered so often. And here, in where I live, it's kind of a... It's always at the end of a sentence. It's like, I don't know why. It's like a period. It's like... Just an or sentence with fuck. It's weird. I don't know why.
Cool.
But it's not funny. It's just how we talk. But I'm not sure. I'll try to think about it, but
yeah, think about it. No problem. I'll move on to the next question. As I said, this was a series of questions. How often does the band use fuck the facts as a response or a dialogue? Like, you know, like if it was the name of the movie, you'd probably have it, you know, as a reaction from the protagonist when presented with, you know, a series of documents or like a docket of legal papers, and you can visualize the protagonist going like, fuck the facts.
You turn towards the camera and you're like, fuck the facts.
Exactly. Yeah, so so how often does the band use the term like that?
Admittedly, as little as possible. Just because it's so cheesy and it's so, you know... People tell me that stuff like way more often, like, fuck the facts, right? And you're like, yeah, right. Fuck them. So we try to not use it unless it's like we're trying to do a bad joke or something like that, just annoy each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like we don't have a tendency to put it everywhere.
All right. So this is us continuing with our humor, and it's only two more questions, don't worry.
Oh, I'm not, it's all good.
So at least let's start off with you. So what is a fact about yourself that you'd like to fuck?
Wow. So many ways of responding to that question.
Exactly.
let's go for the most humorous one, at least.
You're just adding pressure to this.
No, man. Think of it as, okay, what's something about you that, you know, is not really true, or something that you wish was not known by people in the world. So you could be fucking in that way. Like, no, man, that's, you have to fuck the fact there.
I don't know. There's got to be a tons of thing, because, you know, can't be that nice of a person. So it's got to be a lot of things I don't like. I think my girlfriend would say my beard. I know people can't see me, but barely see my mouth.
It's a very, to use a wrestling reference, it's a very Mick Foley-esque appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I feel dumb, but I don't know what to say.
What? Okay, Peter, why don't you make it easier?
Okay, so what's a fact about the band that you'd like to fuck? I think that might be slightly easier for you.
That we chose that fucking name. No, no. We got to live with it, right? Like, this is what happens when you have a name like Fuck the Facts. What fact about Fuck the Facts would I fuck? That's a mouthful. That we're not able to play shows. I think that would be the main fact right now. And I'm sure it's a fact that a lot of bands and a lot of music lovers would like to fuck as well.
Very well said. Yeah. Very well said. Okay. So on that note, Will, I think we'll put you out of your misery and collective groaning about this weird-ass interview or no, podcast this is great. That you're doing.
I did like 50% of the fuck questions. It's not good.
No, man, but thank you so much. You've been an awesome sport.
Yeah.
Thanks to you guys, really. Thanks a lot.
Sorry once again for the litany of bad jokes in that conversation, but on a positive note, I guess this becomes the episode with the most amount of fucks given. It's either that or the KMF episodes, right?
True, true. Completely agree.
Which one is it actually? Why don't you listen, do the math and tell us? We are all ears at hornsuppod.com. You can also catch us on Twitter at hornsuppod. As always, I'm at Asmoani.
And I'm at Trend Crusher.
And this is Horns Up.
Horns Up, guys.